Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
I don't believe that any community is any stronger than the degree to which truth is present.
Welcome to a new episode of Measuring Success Right. My name is Hunter Muse, and I am a current student here at the Marriott School of Business at Brigham Young University. And we are honored and excited to welcome our guest today, Joseph Grinney. Joseph is a four-time New York Times best-selling author, dynamic keynote speaker, and leading social scientist for business performance. For 30 years, Joseph has delivered engaging keynotes at major conferences, including the HSM World Business Forum at Radio City Music Hall. Joseph's work has been translated into 28 languages, is available in 36 countries, and has generated results for 300 of the Fortune 500. Joseph has shared the stage with General Colin Powell, Jack Welch, Jim Collins, Daniel Pink, and Brené Brown at some of the world's premier leadership conferences and organizations, including Willow Creek Global Leadership Summit, American Society of Training and Development, American Bakers Association. Joseph is also the co-author of four immediate New York Times bestsellers, with more than 3 million copies in print: Crucial Conversations, Influencer, Crucial Accountability, and Change Anything. He has contributed regularly to Business Week and Forbes, appeared on the Today Show, CNN, Bloomberg, and Fox Business News, and has been cited in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, USA Today, Los Angeles Times, and Washington Post. For the past 30 years, Joseph has conducted social science research with the goal to help leaders and organizations achieve new levels of performance. Specifically, he has focused on human behavior, the underlying written and unwritten rules that shape what employees do every day. A protege of Albert Bandura, hope I'm saying that right, the world's most influential and greatest living psychologist, Joseph's internationally published research led to the development of his four books, as well as four award-winning training solutions of the same titles, which have helped more than 1 million people in 36 countries change human behavior. Joseph, thank you for joining us on the show.
Good to be with you, Hunter.
So there's so much to talk about with your work and what you've done. You've accomplished so much. One thing that really stuck out to me, and I'd like to kind of get right into and start from the beginning, Albert Bandura, okay, that man considered to be the greatest living psychologist, was your mentor. So I'm curious, how did you meet, and how has his influence impacted your career?
Yeah, so Dr. Bandura was first a mentor from a distance. The relationship came much later, and his books had a profound influence on the way I thought about the two most important problems to me in my life. And so, you know, my central interest has been, why do people do what they do, and how can you help them change? And that cuts through everything that I've pursued in my life. And of course, his theories, social learning theory and social cognitive theory, he's the father of those disciplines in psychology. And so it deeply affected the way I saw the world. Later, as we were working on a book called Influencer, one of my co-authors, who had been a doctoral student of his, introduced me to him. And I was starstruck. I mean, if Elvis Presley had risen from the dead and I was in the room with him, I wouldn't have been more overwhelmed than sitting in Dr. Bandura's home.
Yeah.
And being able to talk with him about what was on his mind, what was going on, and after small talk, getting some guidance from him about the project that we were working on, and the friendship has continued since. There's a project now that we'll probably talk about later called the Other Side Academy, and he's sort of the godfather of that project as well. I was at his house last week, and his first question is always, tell me about the students, and how are they doing? And this is a remarkable human being who at age 95 is writing his next book and still trying to change the world.
Wow. That's a remarkable individual. I'd love to jump into the Other Side Academy and talk about this, because this is just, I found out about it in a class at BYU and was just struck by the mission. There's also a TED Talk that you share about the experiences you've learned working with the Other Side Academy. For those who don't know, could you explain, you know, how it began, and did you expect the results that you've seen? Like, tell us about the mission and kind of how that's been for you?
Sure. So as I was writing the influencer book back in 2005, one of the case studies is a place called Delancey Street in San Francisco. So it was actually Albert Bandura that pointed me in that direction and said, if you want to understand who's doing the best work around criminal recidivism, taking longtime criminal addicts, people that have been running and gunning for decades often, he said, it's right up the peninsula here. So whereas for other case studies, we'd had to fly to Africa or Asia or South America or all over the planet, here I just had to drive up the peninsula. And there on the Embarcadero is this remarkable 300,000 square foot facility that looks like Mediterranean condos that tech millionaires probably live in. But instead you find out it was built by a bunch of convicts. And not only was it built by them, it was paid for by them. And so they were this, at the time I met them, a community of about 500 people living together there trying to find a way to transform their lives. And for anybody that's interested in human change, this is the place to come and visit.
Yeah.
So you're taking some of the most broken people in the world, and within a few years, through this really profound and intense community experience, they become somebody they've never met before. So after writing the book, it stayed with me. And then later on, as a couple of our kids started to get into trouble, and we started seeing in the community how once people serve a first jail sentence, it's almost inevitable they're going to serve a second and a third and a fourth, and then prison comes next. And it's a system that ruins lives rather than turning them around primarily. And I understand there's a public safety mission too, but still, the human effect is just tragic, but at least it's expensive, you know? So we're pouring all this money into it, and it's destroying lives. And so here, by contrast, is this place that costs nothing. So the Other Side Academy was inspired by Delancey Street. The Other Side Academy, which some colleagues and I and my wife started 5 years ago, now has, as we speak today, 105 students who've been arrested an average of 25 times. So for anybody that's ever in Salt Lake City, drive by 7th East and 1st South, and you're going to see a beautiful old historic home that was the origin point for the Other Side Academy. And this entire campus is run now by 105 convicts. And they don't receive any funding from the government, no insurance, nobody pays to come, so it's a self-reliant community as well, which is also remarkable. Our students, if they were serving the prison time that they were facing, would be incarcerated for an additional 600 years. But instead, they're living for a minimum of a couple of years in this community and paying their own way. So they run social enterprises that are the envy of their industry. One of them is a moving company called the Other Side Movers. They'll do 250 to 300 moves a month. They've got 10 trucks that they purchase through their own industry. They'll produce about $2.5 million in revenue this year. And it's, catch this, the number one rated moving company in the entire state.
Oh my goodness.
So you kind of absorb that not only are they not costing the $30 million they would have cost the public purse to incarcerate them, they're producing income and transforming their lives simultaneously. So who wouldn't be struck and fascinated with learning about this kind of community?
Right. How did that begin, I guess? Like, that must have taken a lot of courage and faith and work to say, there is no Other Side Academy. I have this vision. Let's make it happen. Like, what was that? What went into that process?
Yeah. So if you want an honest answer, and I assume this is that kind of podcast where we do honest answers, the straight up answer is my wife and I felt inspired and directed to do it. So we were in a unique position, having written about this model, knowing it existed, but knowing that it really hadn't been replicated across the world. And it wasn't going to. It's been around for 50 years, but nobody has found a way to really scale this.
Yeah.
And so after nudging and prodding and guilt tripping them for 15 years, we realized if anyone's going to do it, it's probably going to have to be us. But that's terrifying. I mean, how do you do this? You invite 105 criminals into your home and just figure it out as you go.
Right.
And so it was an act of faith, but we knew it needed to be done. And we also know, and I've found in my life, that when you follow those promptings, that good things happen.
So when you're selecting all these applicants, there's got to be a process. I mean, what's the process of applications like? What are the attributes, I guess, that you look for? How does that work?
Yeah. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, people can come to the Other Side Academy. There's two ways they come. One is they can walk in. So 90% of our students have been homeless for long stretches, and some without any new charges. Maybe they're not on their way to a prison sentence. Some will just walk in off the streets and sit on what we call the bench. The bench is the portal. It's the access point. And to my wife and myself, this is the democratizing element of the Other Side Academy. You don't have to have money, you don't have to have connections, you don't have to have insurance, you don't have to have anything. Yeah. Anybody on the in the world can sit on the bench and indicate that they want to change their life.
Yeah.
So that's one option. The second is if you've been arrested recently, you're facing new charges, you're incarcerated while you're dealing with your charges, mm-hmm. you write a letter. In which case, our team, our peers, your older peers, prospective older peers, will come to the jail and interview you there. And the nature of that interview is pretty unique. Most of us would probably melt under the heat of that interview. So these are older peers, people that will be some of your leaders in the house, and their job is to scrutinize you for two things. The first is to see if there's at least the spark of a conscience. So they'll ask you to tell about your life, and then they're going to play it back to you in your face and let you know what a monster you've been.
Wow.
And so as you talk about the lives that you've damaged, they're going to see if you could care less about that. And if it looks like there's some remorse, there's some feeling there, then that's part number one. The second element of the interview is looking to see if you can take a punch. Because what's going to happen at the Other Side Academy is you're going to have relentless feedback rained upon you. Your peers are all going to tell you who you are all the time. And that's how people change. If any of us live in a community that tells us the truth about ourselves and holds a mirror up to us regularly, we either change or leave. And at the Other Side Academy, that's what you'll get is nonstop regular feedback. So if you're selfish, if you're impatient, if you're lustful, if you're, you name the moral problem you might have, you're going to hear about it from your colleagues. And of course, the feedback gets less intense as you improve, as you change, and that's the positive part of it. But in that interview, they're watching to see, are you willing to listen to this about yourself? I've actually watched in these interviews as people have said, I'd rather do 15 years in prison than live in a place that's going to tell me about myself. And it's sad, but that was the right choice for them.
Wow. And, you know, when this began, I mean, it seems like at the Other Side Academy, there are some very distinct cultural principles, cultural
sure.
values that didn't come from nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't just exist. How did those get implemented? How did you just kind of, I imagine you had an influence in that and using the principles of your research. How did that process play out?
We were very fortunate early on to find three very capable graduates from Delancey Street that had lived in that environment, and so they had absorbed it through their skin.
Yeah.
And not only had they lived there, but Dave DeRocher, our founding director, he stayed his 2 years. He got forgiven of a 29-year prison sentence after staying his 2 years. He'd already served 20 years in prison previously, so this would have been the rest of his life. In fact, he'd still be in prison today if he wasn't running the Other Side Academy. And so we were able to find these talented folks that had not only their 2 years, but then 5-6 years of leadership experience at Delancey Street. They had chosen to stay longer voluntarily without any incentive from the judicial system. And we see the same, by the way, at the Other Side Academy today. 2/3 of our students ask to stay longer than they have to. Sometimes a year, 2 years, 3 years longer, which is pretty amazing. But they brought with them an enormous amount of tacit knowledge about how to build this kind of community. And then it's been evolutionary. We've worked together to try to improve it. And we know that it's not perfect today. We would like to have a better influence than we currently do.
Right.
But that kind of honesty is how you improve.
Yeah. Do you see this model as being like scalable? Is that your vision? Do you hope? Because I mean, these kind of academies, I would love to see these all over the place, all the cities, all the states in the United States. And how do you see that happening, and how does that play out? Do you feel
that's the mission. So
yeah.
the mission is a bench in every city in the world that wants one. Now, the critical ingredient to one of these communities is strong leadership. And so we can't grow any faster than we have graduates who then develop leadership experience, who then can safely lead a campus.
Right.
It requires the highest rigorous moral standards of any community. In fact, we tell people all the time here in Utah, we're more chaste than BYU, and there's less drug use than BYU. and we mean that seriously. So yeah. We have hardcore meth and heroin addicts, 105 of them right now. They are randomly drug tested by adult probation and parole every single month.
Mm.
And there's not been a single dirty drug test in 5 years of operation, almost 5 years.
Wow.
So kind of absorb that for a moment. How does that happen? It doesn't happen because we have a bunch of guards, a bunch of therapists, a bunch of police, we don't have a militant police state there. It's
yeah.
a peer system. But it has to be led by peers who are living at such a high moral standard that sets the tone for the entire house.
Yeah.
And that's why it works.
Right. That's so inspiring for me because
So I come from three generations of police officers.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've been on the other side, and I've always, you know, I've always wanted to see something like this happen, and felt like, you know, we believe in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that people can change, that people can, but it's hard to change. And so I really admire so much the work you guys are doing, and it just brings me so much hope that it's possible to change.
It's true for all of us. I'll just you know, contribute here that I was at a meeting with prosecutors in Utah Valley today, so about 20 or so of the prosecutorial staff, and we brought four of our older graduates down there who had come from Utah County.
Mm.
And what a sacred moment to see these prosecutors who had thrown these students in jail and prison multiple times, now see them and not even recognize them.
Yeah.
And these prosecutors have a heart too. They hate the prospect of the revolving door.
Yeah.
And just repeatedly invoking the same punishment that didn't do any good last time. And literally every prosecutor who saw the people that they had been involved with teared up at that experience. It was a precious moment.
Wow, that's gotta be amazing to be on the front lines of that. And in your TED Talk, you mentioned some of the values and the processes that contribute to that change that happens in the students. I'd love for you to talk about, you know, what have been the keys to change? What have been the values that have led to this impact on their lives?
There are a number. We have 12 what we call beliefs, and not to be confused with a 12-step program,
yeah,
but 12 practices and principles that, mm-hmm. that are how we operate at the Other Side Academy. I would say one of the critical ones is self-reliance.
Mm.
And so, you know, here are people that have been parasites on society for the last 10, 20, 30 years. You know, they're incarcerated at everybody else's expense. They're stealing, robbing, lying, manipulating, and so that's been their lifestyle. And now they arrive at the Other Side Academy and no one's going to do anything for them, and they've got to support themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the moving company is run by them and owned by them, and we don't eat if we don't bring in money, that's critical. There is no safety net. The fact that the thrift boutique, yeah, everyone's got to open it in the morning and close it at night, and things have to sell, and we have to have customers that are going to come back regularly. It's their responsibility. This isn't a play program. We don't have professional staff that are the real people there, and then the students have these propped up jobs underneath them.
Yeah.
And so the self-reliance gives them the opportunity, number one, to live in a world with real consequences, but number two, a world with real rewards, to be able to feel pride.
Yeah.
Our students work harder than any who get paid from a moving company would. They carry things carefully into a house and they run back to the truck. They are twice as productive as anybody in the industry. And the reason they are that way is because they know it's their chance to practice self-reliance.
Mm.
The second is 200% accountability. So everyone is told the day they arrive, you are 100% accountable to follow all the standards of the house, but you're also 100% accountable for everybody else following those standards.
Mm.
And the fastest way to get in the worst kind of trouble at the Other Side Academy is not to do something wrong, it's to see somebody do something wrong and say nothing about it.
Mm.
And so, you know, feature this, that you've got people who in prison or living on the street were sworn to never ratting anybody else out. And that's what it was called, was ratting.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're in a place where you are responsible to call everybody out on even the most minor offense that you witness. If somebody tosses a piece of paper across the room into a trash can rather than carrying it over and setting it in, you're supposed to correct them. And I invite you anytime, Hunter, to come to the Other Side Academy and violate one of our rules. You'll experience what we call a pull-up.
Yes.
Instantly, reflexively, people will correct your behavior. And it doesn't matter if it's me, it doesn't matter if it's a director. When it comes to truth, truth in that house is independent of authority.
Huh.
And so those two are very critical elements of creating change.
Do you feel like that principle applies to all people? Like, how would that principle of truth and transparency and accountability? I don't know if you've thought about that before.
Oh,
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think the principles that make the Other Side Academy work are the same principles that make a family work or not work if you live on the other side of them. Or if you think about a church community, you think about a ward or an elders' quorum relief society, and what goes wrong is when we can't talk about what's real.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see things in each other. And so the whole focus of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints today on ministry is about, can we create a real ministering culture,
yeah,
where we're honest with each other about about what's going on. And when we see problems with one another, that we can address the truth in love with one another. And that's what you see more intensely at the Other Side Academy than most any place I've ever been. Mm. I live to a higher moral standard than I ever have because I hang around with convicts.
That's a great line. We're going to have to use that when we talk about the podcast to other people. So have you had students graduate, and what kind of work do they do now? Like, how does that work post the Other Side Academy?
I'm curious. It's the most wonderful thing in the world. My wife and I feel like we have 105 grandchildren now, and we do. And then about 70 graduates as well. So the program started with just a handful of students, and then the community has grown, so the graduates are just now starting to come out the other end of the experience. And we have them involved with construction. We have them in IT. We've got somebody going to a coding camp here soon. We have folks working in high-end culinary services and the hospitality industry. Mm. We have quite a number that have said, I want to stick around and help grow the campus and save people's lives like mine was saved.
Sure.
And what a wonderful way to give back.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing now the fruits of all of that labor. Going today to Utah County and seeing four of them stand in front of prosecutors and tell their story in a noble way is an overwhelming experience to see that.
Yeah.
What we know, and transparency is critical for us as an organization, not just for our students, we know that it's critical to our having integrity ourselves to be transparent about the fact that some people fail. Mm-hmm. So in the first 2 weeks, about 25% of people that come in and pass our interview, they walk out. Mm. And they say, this is too hard, I don't want to do this. And some of them will head back to long jail or prison sentences, but they say, I'd rather be there than doing this for a couple of years. Mm. So there are failures. And we need to look at that so that we can say, did we miss out? Could we have done something better? How do we improve? And lives are at stake.
Yeah. For someone like me or others who might want to, you know, I'm not sure how far we can get involved, but to support this sort of movement, what are the names of the stores? Like, what could we do to kind of support?
Oh, I'll take any advertising you want to offer. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are lots of ways. The students start to see themselves as different human beings when they can see themselves as part of different communities. Mm. They usually, when they arrive, have defined themselves as the bad guys.
Yeah.
And that's been their identity. At the Other Side Academy, we have people like yourself coming in and around the students all the time so that they can realize, I can have peer relationships with people I never thought worthy to participate with. Mm. And so it's critical that this is a permeable membrane, not some sort of lockdown facility.
Yeah.
So one of the best ways to support us is just to hire the moving company, or it's to go to the thrift boutique. So the Other Side Thrift Boutique, we have one in Mill Creek, we have one in Murray, 4290 South State. The other is about 33rd South and 13th East in Salt Lake City here. And they are the Nordstrom of thrift boutiques. Really high-end goods, incredible service. And so people that usually wouldn't shop at a thrift store go to the thrift boutique, so the Other Side Thrift Boutique. Mm. The other is people come all the time for tours on campus, and they come and speak to our students. So we have a Wednesday night kind of TED Talk format where we have people that just come and share a story from their life and how they manage something or something that they've learned. And that creates a wonderful chance for our students to engage with people that manage things differently than they did.
Yeah.
So lots and lots of opportunities.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to go to the thrift boutique.
Please do.
I'm going to go. So you've written multiple books. I've read one of them, and I'm working on the other. I read Crucial Conversations. I'm in the middle of reading Influencer.
I won't ruin the ending for you.
The riveting page turners. They're awesome. They really are. And especially Crucial Conversations so far has deeply affected me, you know, whether I'm in church or at work or talking with family members. I've applied the principles. And just the other day, I was talking with a family member who I normally get into like really frustrating misunderstandings with.
Are they going to listen to this podcast?
maybe. I won't send this one to him.
Okay.
I love him. He knows I love him. But I found myself using the tools from the book, from Crucial Conversations, to help kind of connect with them and resolve the situation. And so for our listeners, I'd love for them to know, like, what are some of those core principles that help us in these emotional, difficult conversations that happen in life?
Yeah, to me, one of the most important is understanding my own emotions. We call it master my stories in crucial conversations. And boy, this factors in huge at the Other Side Academy as well.
Yeah.
But you know, most of us think that our emotions are things other people do to us or the circumstances do to us. And what we try to do in the book is break down the three kinds of story patterns that all of us tend to have that cause us to self-justify, that cause us to either justify going to silence and feeling resentful and simmering or moving to what we call violence, becoming aggressive or accusatory with other people. And you don't, as decent human beings, you don't move to silence or violence in your communication unless you have some story that helps you feel okay about doing that. Mm. And so I think one of the master skills of life is coming to understand the way you're representing reality to yourself in a way that's undermining your own interests.
One of the big hedges, I guess, to creativity and to openness, I guess, is not feeling safe to share or to be wrong. And you talk about fostering safety in the book, and you know, at BYU we have our own, you know, challenges, you know, with making sure we're inclusive to our community and fostering safety in our conversations with all the different groups that are part of our community. I guess, how can we effectively foster that safety and security in our relationships and conversations?
Yeah, it's a skill, and it's a skill all of us need, I don't believe that any community is any stronger than the degree to which truth is present. Mm. So if people can't be authentic about their feelings, concerns, frustrations, opinions, and so we struggle at BYU today with diversity and how do you create a feeling of unity even when people are at different places in their lives and dealing with different kinds of struggles. The only way to get there is not by dancing around difficult conversations, it's through the middle of them.
Yeah.
And the glorious thing that we try to communicate in the crucial conversation book is you can talk with almost anyone about almost anything if they feel safe with you.
Mm.
And we all know this.
Yeah.
We have trusted friends that we feel safe enough with that you can tell them that you think their term paper stinks and that the writing is horrible and they're going to be able to hear it from you. You can tell somebody they've got body odor. You know, you can tell somebody you think they're incompetent.
Right.
And you can hear that from them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible for us to express truth if we feel safe. And yet what you and I falsely conclude is that the way to make people feel safe is to water down the message.
Mm.
It's to give half-truths. It's to sugarcoat the feedback.
Yeah.
And that's not how it works. In fact, one of the favorite studies I've ever done was a study of scriptural references to crucial conversations.
Yeah.
And so you can look at the New Testament, you look at the Old Testament, you look at any of the LDS scripture as well, and you find moments when God is giving feedback to somebody.
Yeah.
Talk about a great data set, right?
Right.
So you'd think God is probably a reasonably good communicator,
yeah.
right? And so if you've got somebody that is supposedly reporting on how the Savior would have said this or how our Father in Heaven would have said this, it's a nice day. And one of the things you never find is them sugarcoating.
Mm.
They don't. They don't say, I'm going to spare this poor person's withering ego by not telling them exactly what I think they need to hear in order to improve their lives.
Yeah.
And so then you have to ask yourself, how does God get away with it? Well, God gets away with it because we know that God loves us. We know that God cares about our interests. We feel safe with God.
Right.
And so God can speak frankly. If that's true, then that's the basis for all of our communication with one another as well.
Mm.
We need to be able to do two things simultaneously. Number one, create safety, help people know that we care about their interests and their concerns, their problems, that we love them, basically, and tell them the truth.
Yeah.
And if you can do both of those things simultaneously, you can solve problems.
Yeah. I think one big thing is just you're just scared that you're going to ruin a relationship or hurt their feelings or something like that. So that's always something that's, whenever I'm thinking about giving honest feedback, I'm like, oh man, I don't want to hurt their feelings. But you're saying basically, look at the bigger picture in the long term of how the truth is actually going to help them.
Yeah, I think one of the best ways to increase your boldness in crucial conversations is to stop lying to yourself.
Yeah.
And so when we say I'm worried about their feelings, the truth is we really aren't. We're worried about our feelings.
Mm.
We're not worried about theirs. We're worried that they're not going to like us, that they're going to be mad at us, that they're going to reject us, that they're going to, it's me, 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 me.
Right.
And so if you really kind of own up to the fact that, no, what I'm doing is putting my interests ahead of yours. Mm. I've got a message that could dramatically improve our relationship, that could create a sense of intimacy and honesty between us. But you know what? I'm not going to give it to you.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to feel bad. I don't want to lose this false sense of friendship that the two of us have right now.
Mm.
If you're honest with yourself about that being the reality of this moment, more often than not, you're going to say, you know what? This is worth the risk.
Yeah. There's so much to talk about with this, and I wish we had, you know, hours to get dive into all the principles in the book. I recommend anyone listening to check them out because they will change your life. I want to change gears a little bit to talk about kind of your path and your career. You know, as I was doing research for the interview, I kind of noticed that you didn't really have a conventional career path in a way.
Yeah, that's true.
So I looked at your LinkedIn, okay? And you know, you graduated from BYU, but then kind of jumped right into professional coaching at Franklin Covey, right? Before founding your own company at Vital Smarts. But it seems like you've had a very like purpose-driven career. How have you kind of created that for yourself? And I think a lot of our listeners would like to do the same. So what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I think you've described what's been important to me is saying, am I here for a purpose?
Mm.
I felt like early on, and I know people make decisions about their professional work in different ways. For some, it's purely instrumental. It's a way to produce income so that I can do the things that are really sacred and most important to me, which are different, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
For me, it's been different. Mm. From age 12, I received what in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints we call a patriarchal blessing,
mm-hmm.
and that gave me a sense about that I have a mission here on earth, and I'm to prepare it and to help people prepare, to help the planet to improve.
Mm.
And so that's been the filter through which I tried to find a career that was worthy of that.
Mm.
And that led me to where I am. And boy, I'm forever grateful. The fact that I found Stephen Covey as he was leaving BYU and starting an organization and realized there was a way to try to influence people in a positive way in a work context and have a rewarding career while doing it.
Yeah.
And that giving me the training to later be involved with the Other Side Academy and with an organization called Unitas.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been richly, richly blessed. But I think the organizing principle was purpose.
Mm-hmm. So I was chatting with one of your employees and she mentioned that you had talked about some life lessons from your career and from early on in your life that kind of helped inform this purpose and inform your decisions. I'd love if you could, you know, share a couple of those.
Yeah. Well, I'll share one that's been central.
Yeah.
And it's one that I continue to try to honor. And the principle is always honor preparatory promptings.
Mm.
I think that if you have a purposeful life that sometimes you feel tapped on the shoulder, and sometimes it's in the form of somebody saying, hey, you really ought to meet so-and-so. And we've all had those suggestions come, and you have a little tingle that hits you in that moment that says, that's probably right.
Mm.
But then most of us don't follow through on it. And or somebody will say, hey, here's an article you ought to read. Here's a book you ought to read. And again, you'll have a little tingle about it. And you don't know why. You don't know how it's going to factor in later on, but it's a piece of a puzzle that's being handed to you.
Mm.
And I think that most of our visions die birthing.
Yeah.
Because we don't honor those preparatory moments. And then when the opportunity comes that we could have been prepared for, we can't seize it.
Yeah.
I will say that one of the disciplines I feel like I've tried to dutifully follow has been that. From the time that I was at Brigham Young University and up to today, I'm careful to notice in those moments that this is important and that I'm ignoring something that could potentially be of great moment. And I have seen hundreds and hundreds of times where when I read that book that somebody put into my hands, that it might be a month afterwards that I now know why.
Mm.
Or when I meet somebody, it might be 2 years later that I'll realize that was a person that was needed to solve this problem. The Other Side Academy has been such a culmination of all of that. All of the books and people, Dr. Bandura and Meeting Mimi Silbert and others that converged to create that moment. If I hadn't honored those, I wouldn't be able to do the work I'm doing today.
Mm. Thank you so much for sharing that. As our last question that we ask all of our guests on our show is called Measuring Success Right.
Hmm.
And, you know, as students, we're at the beginning of our life. We have a lot of decisions ahead of us, and we want to make sure that we've kind of got our idea of what success is going to be for us so that we're making the right decisions at the right time in our lives. And so for you, Joseph, in your life, how do you measure success?
Hmm. For me, life is a stewardship. And we're all given some resources. And I think it's a healthy practice on a regular basis to stop and say, how good of a steward have I been? Mm. I think we're all aimed at different things. I think the crises, the problems, the tragedies of our lives are all educative, and they're all directional for us. They all give us a sympathy for and an understanding of problems in the world that should draw us in a direction to minister and to take advantage. Those are part of our stewardship as well. So it isn't just the assets, it's the liabilities that are also things that you're steward over. I think the proper way to measure it is to sit back occasionally and not say how much fun do I have or what's the scorecard in my bank account, but have I accomplished what I'm here for?
Joseph, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
It's an honor.
It's been an honor for us to have you and to have you share your life and experiences. This is Hunter Muse with Measuring Success Right. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Joseph for joining us today, and see you next time.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about Measuring Success Right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review, or online at marriottstudentreview.org.